Welcome back to the Big Move Podcast. I'm your host, Em. I'm a content creator, podcast producer, and a mother. And as I thought about a new season of the podcast, I went back to my roots and what made me start this show to begin with. At its core, it's this idea of connection, relatability, and motivating each other through the impactful conversations we're having as women. I'll be talking to the same powerhouse caliber of female guests that I know are going to light you up, but we're getting real on how they've redefined themselves in entirely new seasons and phases of life. We're honing in on what fuels us, what brings us back to ourselves, and ultimately, what keeps us moving. So with that, let's get into new episodes. Amy, hi. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining me. I'm super excited to dive in on all of the things, Tower 28, founder story, your incredible track record. But for those that may not already know you, do you mind giving us a quick intro, a quick background on who you are and what you're all about?
Oh, so I have worked in the beauty industry for now, God, it's been 23 years at this point, but I've also had eczema my entire adult life. And so the combination of that made me really want to start my own brand. I grew up in a family of entrepreneurs. My dad was an entrepreneur. My parents immigrated from Taiwan. I was born in the Midwest and then grew up mostly in California. And so I started Tower 28 about 6.5 years ago out of this frustration I had where I felt like products were not, they were either clean or they were safe for sensitive skin. They were very rarely both of those things. And oftentimes products that were clean or safe for sensitive skin, even if you get one of those, they weren't necessarily high performance. And so today, Tower 28 is literally that. They are products that are clean, safe for sensitive skin, high performance, and I like to say an accessible price point. So you can shop at every Sephora, US, Canada, Middle East, the UK, at Sephora and get to carry that little black and white bag, but yet our products are really entry-level price point.
Yeah. I love it. Such an incredible brand that I've gotten to know, especially I would say like very recently. Tower 28 has become such a household name. I'm excited to dive into all the nitty gritty there. But to set the stage for us, I love to kick off with the meaty question that is, what's your big move? What's been the pivotal turning point in your story, in your journey that has really shaped you?
Yeah, I think the biggest move, honestly, when I look back on it, is I quit. So despite the fact that I just told you I worked in the industry for 23 years, when I would say my career was kind of at its peak. I mean, I say that without having known that this was going to happen later on. But when my career was going really well and I was head of marketing for, so I started at Smashbox. I went to Kate Somerville. I went to Josie Maran. I was at Josie Maran and I was the head of marketing there. But I was also the first executive and had really been there from the time that we were, I don't know, 3 million and grew up to 50 million in like a really short period of time. I think that happened over the course of like 3 years. So things in my career were like, felt like big and wonderful. But at the same time, I also had like these two little kids at home. And the combination of being in a startup that was growing and moving fast and confusing and frankly hard at the same time as having small kids was really hard for me. And I quit. And I think at the time I would tell you, my therapist would tell you that it was like experiencing death. It really felt like grief that I went through and grief of not only the job itself and kind of my structure and this industry that I'd been part of, but also grief of like this identity that I had. And so I did not work full time for about 4 years before I started Tower 28. And at the time, I would tell you it was really hard, but looking back on it, I think it was so, to your point about a big move, I think it was really pivotal and important. And I don't think I would be able to do what I'm doing today had I not had that moment. And I wouldn't even call it rest, right? I had two small kids. It wasn't like I, you know, stopped. I didn't have childcare. Like I had a third child during that time too. So it was like, I was very much doing mom life. And I was also, so I was raising my kids. Got pregnant. We bought our first home. I remodeled it and I was still consulting. So I wouldn't say that I rested, but I think like taking that time away from having like just such a full-on job and having more agency in my own life to like actively choose what I was doing and to kind of test out, honestly, even seeing what it was like to be a stay-at-home mom. I think that was such an important, which I don't think everybody gets the opportunity to try out the other side. And I think that that was a huge thing for me too.
Yeah. There's so much there that I want to break down with you. I'm like, where do we start? It's like, you know, the identity shifts. That's a huge theme of this season with all of my guests. I think where I'd like to start is I'd love to dig into what were you grappling with from a mental standpoint at that time when you left? You took that step back from corporate life. Like, what was going on mentally and how were you sort of combating those mental demons?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me was I just felt like I was doing a lot of things and nothing well. I really felt like this guilt around kind of just being like 80% in everything I was doing and that I couldn't. I think we as humans want to feel like the time that we spend on anything is well worth it and because we're making a contribution and I'm sure you are too, but like super achievement oriented and a lot of my identity based in sort of not just, I mean, I hate to say it, but like, especially then, I would say I'm getting better now, but like, not just who I am, but what I do and like what I achieve. And I was trying to do all the things. I was trying to be like the mom who, now I think about how dumb it is, but I was like the mom who, you know, rented like the fire truck for my 2-year-old's birthday party and then made like hand put on all the water bottles with like his Logan's fire truck birthday or whatever it was, you know, things that like, frankly, your kid doesn't care about at all. You're just doing it to, you know, like these thematic parties that you're doing really to impress like who the other moms. And I think for some people, it's great because it's like this real creative outlet. If you're doing it for yourself, that's fantastic. But if you're doing it not for that reason, I don't know. Like it just felt like, yeah, from an identity standpoint, I think I was just grappling with a lot of this. You know, like I had made an investment in my career. I had gone to business school. I thought this great resume, right? And I think the idea of stepping off that track and then like, what if I couldn't get back on it felt so scary to me. And then I think there's also this other part of it where it's my community, right? I've only had one other job that wasn't in the beauty industry. And so like in a lot of ways, like I always say that beauty is kind of the sorority of my adult life. And so leaving that, even like just on a daily basis, like it felt like, again, like an identity shift, like am I without that. And I found myself, you know, when people, so when I stopped working, it happened very, it was sort of like long and fast, meaning that like, I didn't even really talk to my husband about how unhappy I was. But I found myself talking to other people at work who were also unhappy about things. And I would, or like coworkers and things like that. But I wasn't really talking to my husband a ton about it, moms. And a few things happened. One, I was at work one day and Sephora had flown down and we were in a meeting. And the girl who was acting kind of like the receptionist had walked into the room. And I don't know if I had just put my phone away or why I was not picking up or whatever, but she came in and she was like, Amy, your kid's school called, there's a problem. And I was like, what? And she's like, they tried calling, my husband was out of town. He was like in Switzerland or something at the time for work. They were like, there's a problem with your daughter. I think she was probably 3 years old and in preschool at the time. And she had a febrile seizure, which is a fever induced seizure. And it is very intense. Like I've never seen it myself, but the teachers who saw it, like it is a very intense thing to see, like where they're like foaming at the mouth and they're like, they see eyes rolling back. And I remember she came in and she said this to me and I got on the phone and they were like, she's in an ambulance right now, like headed to the hospital. And it was also really far, right? I live in LA, we commute really far. And when I got to the hospital, I thought a lot about like the trade-offs I was making at that point. Mm-hmm. And how, listen, I think work is important. It's important for financially, it was important to us, but also like it was important to me to feel like I was like doing something with my brain. Mm-hmm. I still think that's true. But I think that combination of like me not being happy and then these things happening, I was just like, maybe this is it. And then I had come home and told my husband I was really unhappy at one point. And he was just like, why wouldn't you just quit then? I don't know why. You know, and we didn't live a fancy lifestyle. And so he was like, listen, like, this is the way the math works. Like, if we don't have help, and help is expensive in LA. And he was like, if you don't, we don't have help. And then you stop working and, you know, we'll be fine. And I think, unfortunately, not to harp on a different point, but I think even for women, because the cost of childcare is so high and you have to cover yourself, like I was commuting an hour each way, 5 days a week, which nowadays people don't even do that. Like, you do think about these things. You're like, it's, it feels like an investment in your own career, because you're like, if I have to pay someone after, you know, tax dollars, all of this money to help take care of my kids, and they're working 10 hours a day, at least if I have to work 8 hours, then you have, you know, babysitters and whatever you're doing for like to go out at night, then you're kind of like, well, how much of it am I really making? How much do I value my time and my kids? And I think that's like a whole different problem we have in society, because it makes it hard for women to invest in themselves.
Absolutely. There's so many things that you shared that it seems like culminated to your large revelation of like, this was the right thing for you and your family at that time. By the way, just to touch on the febrile seizure, my son had one when he was 2.5 and I experienced it. It is so, so scary, but what a perspective shaker too, brings you back to what's really important. And I think it's important to call out that some of those big life moments, they bring you to making these large decisions.
I was also scared, to be clear. Like, I kind of made the decision very quickly. And then I was also like very frightened by it, because I was so afraid to, like, I think about this all the time, but I had once heard Conan O'Brien do a commencement speech where he talks about how like going to Harvard is like wearing a bright white suit that you're afraid to get dirty. Mm-hmm. And I think we build our resumes like that too, like where we work on things and we work on them so that we can tell somebody else's story about like, look, aren't you proud of me? I did all these things. And then it gets scary because you're like, you have these golden handcuffs and you're like, what if I tarnish this like white suit that I've built?
Yeah, absolutely. Talk to us a little bit about dabbling in consulting, because I think so many women experience what you did, where maybe they're going to take a step back or leave their corporate job, and then they feel like they don't know where to start. How did you dip your toe back into consulting? Did you call in your network? What were just like some of the initial steps that you took to get back in the game, so to speak?
Yeah, I think one of the most important things is, I mean, so I didn't have to work very hard to find consulting roles, which I think the only reason that's true is because I had good relationships and I had a good reputation. And so I think you have to start from there, right? Because that just makes it so much easier. And then I think it's just getting the word out and letting people know what to consider you for. I had a friend last night who sent me a note and she's like, I really need help getting consulting. And I'm like, can you be more specific? What is it that you feel like is your kind of unfair advantage? How do I bill you? How do I connect you? Because you have to make it easy for someone else to help you if you want them to help you. So for me, marketing is kind of my area of expertise, but also like marketing is very broad as a statement. And so I think it was more like going to the size and type of company where I was interested in learning from. So I kind of focused on, I wanted to be with more digitally based brands, because this is, you know, when that just started happening more. And so I was like, okay, how about like a Lime Crime? And I knew people who worked at Lime Crime. So I'm like, go to coffee with someone. What are you guys doing? Like, what's going on at the business? Where do you guys feel like you need help? And then I would pitch myself. So for instance, with Lime Crime, they were working on developing their org chart. And I was like, I had done so much of that when I was working at Josie that I was like, okay, like, let me help you. Let me help you think through kind of like what the different org charts could look like, how you would like have people work together. And then also they were working on their SIM, which is their kind of marketing like deck for selling the company essentially, or raising money, I should say. And so I was like, okay, these are some things I feel like I could help you with. How does it look? You know, but so much of it is like listening to what someone's problem is mm-hmm. and figuring out how you can help them. Mm-hmm. I think the danger in consulting is, one, it can be very hard to go through this process of like putting together an SOW or pitching yourself, and then them changing, like, because in order to thoughtfully pitch something, you have to actually really understand what their needs are, mm-hmm. spend time with someone to get to that point, and then you might still not get the role. And then two, I think the biggest mistake I made, which I still think I would warn anyone of, is I consulted a few times where I was like, I'm going to be your interim CMO and everybody else is full-time, but I'm going to be 2 days a week. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to be like X amount of hours a day. And like, if everybody else is working in a completely different capacity than you are, and you're subbing for someone, I think that's just letting everybody, and I ended up working so much more than I was kind of meant to, because I would go for these meetings and they'd be like, okay, now we're going to go to lunch. And I'm like, do I charge you for lunch? I don't think I charge you for lunch. Right. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But I think in general, the most important thing is just to have a good reputation and to have good relationships, because I think we all work based on word of mouth, and every industry is small. The beauty industry is very small.
Yeah, absolutely. So take us to the fruition of Tower 28. I think what's so inspiring about your story, and I'm sure you get this a lot, is, you know, you started it after 40, which is incredible and empowering. So I want to start there. Why did this feel like the life stage of, this is time to start my brand, my business?
I mean, I wish I could tell you that I had this overwhelming feeling that it was the right stage or that I was ready. I never got this like feeling of, okay, I'm ready. And I think, I don't know, to me, it's kind of like having kids. I also never got the feeling that like I was ready to have kids. I got pregnant on my honeymoon. So it just sort of happened, right? And I think the business thing happened because I went to coffee with a friend of mine, and I was trying to get back into the industry. I was like, okay, I'm going to go back to work full time. My daughter had just started preschool. And I was like, okay, these are the types of things I want. I want something funded. I want something where I have a seat at the table. I want blah, blah, blah. And I met with a friend of mine from business school, and he was like, I thought you wanted to start your own thing. And I was like, well, I do, or I did, but I think that ship has sailed. Like, I'm too old. I'm 40. I don't have money. We had just bought our first house and I had remodeled it. So we had a mortgage. We had chosen to put our kids in private school, which is in LA. It's a very expensive choice to make. And I felt like I could make a pretty good salary. So I thought that moment had passed. And so when he said, he basically offered to be my first money in if I could raise the rest of the money. And I think that was really the catalyst. So I don't think I made an active choice. I think I was opportunistic when I felt like a door kind of like opened a little bit, like I got a crack of a window open and I kind of took it. So I don't know if it's the same for everybody, right? Like everyone gets a shot in a different way, and sometimes you have to take it for yourself. I felt lucky that I kind of, someone opened the door for me a little.
So you mentioned the sensitive skin piece, but talk to us about like, what's the gap in the market? You have so many amazing years working with such a great trajectory of beauty brands. So how do you land on what is the gap in the market? What's the differentiator, and like where you're going to lean on? How does that kind of moment come up for you?
I think it really also evolved. And so again, like think about it as when I started, even when I was working at Josie, it was at a time when clean beauty was very early. And the idea of clean was really like, how natural can we make it? How organic can we make it? And so everyone, I don't know if you remember this, but back in the day, we used to put like stickers or things on the bottles that would say like 98% organic, 35, you know, 88% organic. And the definition of clean was just kind of natural. But the truth is, just because something is more natural doesn't mean that it's better for you. I always say like poison ivy is natural. It doesn't mean it's good for you, right? And so that kind of filter of looking at products that were clean and safe for sensitive skin, that was happening. Well, the clean part was happening and safe for sensitive skin was happening, but they weren't really together. And then to look at it as, okay, and then something that would work. I think back in the day when we thought about clean, we felt like, oh, well, if I want something clean, it can't be pigmented. If I want something clean, it can't be long wear. Like you had to give up something in order to get this thing that was good for you. And so the industry has changed. I think the biggest differentiator now for us between us and the other brands, I think, is really just our own kind of ethos and identity. So not only is it like checking the box, fine, clean, safe, and also high performance, but I think there's this other kind of intangible that is really important, which is, I think that we do a good job of making the customer feel like they're cool and that they are, that we're giving them this brand that sees them and gives them this aspirational lifestyle of what I like to say is like a love letter to Los Angeles. Mm-hmm, so the brand Tower 28 is also named after a lifeguard tower at the intersection of Santa Monica and Venice. And I've just very genuinely always loved this LA lifestyle that I've grown up in, where it is healthy and that's almost expected. Like, people here don't drink an alternative milk because they think it's cool. They drink it because they think it's better for them, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're just like daily, it's embedded in our culture, but then it's also embedded in our culture that, I don't know, inclusivity, a lot of the values that I would say that I think that we have. And I think it's cool, right? So, and again, I think part of that is I didn't want to feel like a patient. I didn't want to feel like, for some people who are very sensitive, and for me, it's eczema. For other people, it's like, you know, psoriasis, rosacea, whatever it might be, acne. But like, for me, I didn't want someone, like, some people like will reach for like their Aveeno oatmeal bath. And then when they're having a flare up, they experience that and then they're better and they go back to their regular routine. For me, it's my lifestyle, right? Like, I try to eat healthy as a lifestyle. I don't just do it like for, you know, I don't eat a salad and then spend a month eating burgers. Like, I try to balance all the time. And so I think that's this my same approach to makeup. It doesn't mean I don't use anything on my skin ever that is a little bit more spicy or whatever, but I try to balance it.
Yeah, that's so fair. You guys have been in Sephora for how long at this point?
So we launched in April of 2019 on literally an Instagram mood board and a Shopify site. Like, I didn't even send an email to my friends telling them that we were doing this because I was so, I don't know, nervous, embarrassed. Like, what if people didn't like it? I just didn't, you know, know. Then we pitched Credo, which is a clean beauty retailer where Annie Jackson was my old merchant back in the day when I was working. And then they said yes, which was really exciting. So we got into Credo in like maybe July. And then by September, we were in Sephora.com. By March of 2020, we were in every store in Sephora in the US and Canada.
Wow.
So it went really, it sort of was like this like long career that I've had working in the industry, wanting to do this. And then when we launched, it moved pretty quickly. I knew my product was good.
Yeah.
I didn't know if, you know, Sephora likes to say it is harder to get into Sephora than it is to get into Harvard. And I didn't get into Harvard, so I didn't know that I was going to get into Sephora. So I think there for every entrepreneur, I think there has to be like both hope and a little delusion. You know what I mean? You have to like suspend belief, right? It is so uncommon to be able to get into all stores like that if I was basing it off of, I don't know, historical, I wouldn't have even tried. Mm-hmm. So like the idea that we just tried something different.
Yeah.
I'm not a celebrity. I've always known I'm not a celebrity. And so I knew I had to do something a little bit more kind of eye-catching and different.
Yeah, absolutely. Something you said about instilling, you know, that belief and that confidence. I feel like this comes up so much, whether, you know, you're building a huge beauty brand like yours or you're building a personal brand or a business. How do you do that on a day-to-day basis? Are there things you're leaning on? Are there mantras? What has worked well for you?
You know, I think one of the things that has really helped is knowing other women in the space who are both like ahead of you and who are behind, like everyone's at a different kind of point in their evolution. And I think the more you get to know other people who are trying to do the same thing you are, whether it's in the same industry or not, I think there's something about it that's really, like, I was just on the phone actually with Priscilla Tsai from Coco Kind, who's a good friend. And like right before this, and she was telling me about some of the troubles that she's having. And I was telling her about some of the troubles I've been having. And I think there's something so calming about that, that makes it feel like it's that we're all just kind of trying to do the same thing. And we all fail and we all thrive at different moments. Mm-hmm. But I think really so much of the job is just showing up. Like, you just have to keep showing up. Mm-hmm. And I think so much of it is mindset too, like just mm-hmm. being able to weather the storm. But I would say I take a lot of, like, I feel very fortunate that I have a lot of community in the industry. And I think I live in a city, so I live in LA. And I think LA in particular has a very strong female founder network as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So it sounds like you reach on, you know, your network, your community, the people around you, your relationships. I love that. Are there small things day to day that you're doing? Are you into mindfulness or meditation? Or are there small things that you do that are sort of keeping you motivated?
I mean, I try to go on a walk every single morning. And that was something that really started this year. My husband is our CFO, and he and I go on a walk. It's funny because he literally, his office is at the extreme other side of our office. Like, we don't really see each other that much during the day, kind of by design, I think. We drive separate cars. We don't eat lunch together. Like, we don't really do anything together during the day, but we try to go on a walk every day. And mm-hmm. I think that there's something really healthy about that, which mm-hmm. is like, it's like very important to me that I do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a fan of getting out in nature too. I got that from my mom. She's very old school in that way. And it's like been ingrained in me, but there is something to it. It's like a science.
I think there's something to it. And I think there's also something important about feeling small in the world.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I think that's what nature does for me is like, mm-hmm. you have these moments where you're like, oh, I'm just like such a small part of this big mm-hmm. world. My problems aren't that important. My, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can you give us an inside look to a day, whether there is like a fire to put out at Tower 28, the kids have exhausted you, you have nothing left in the tank. Take us to a day like that. What are you reaching for?
When you said that, I'll be honest with you, the first thing I thought about is how, so we were living in the Palisades and we have experienced a lot of fire this year, and it's crazy enough, it is actually the second time we've experienced a house fire. So years ago, we were renting a house and lived in it for like a week. And that house actually completely burned down. We lost everything in that one. This time, our house in the Palisades is actually standing, but our entire community is gone. We're one of five houses on the street that's standing, and it has lead and asbestos. So I have a very real version of this, where the house was on fire. And then there were tariffs. I mean, this year has been a hard one. And I would say, so to answer your question of where I go back to, I think I always just go back to, like, what can I control? I think if you're bothered by the things that you can't control, it's kind of, there's not much you can do, right? So I try to just figure out what is it that is within my control and that I can actually effect, and then also try to have gratitude. Like, the truth is, despite the fact that, like, I don't know, we've had all these kind of very inconvenient things that have happened, but also, like, you know, there's an emotional side of it, obviously, too, from a community aspect. But at the end of the day, the most important thing, my family and our health, like, the stuff part of it, I don't know, that part is kind of whatever to me, and we can recover from it financially. I guess I try to really, to answer your question, I really try to go back to a place of gratitude.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you sharing that, just, it's, again, just such a perspective shift. It just brings you back to what's truly important. So I really appreciate you sharing that. And it's so candid and it's very real.
You know, I have friends who have had really different reactions to this fire. And obviously there's different financial implications for a lot of different people. And a different connectedness to the community in a different way. Like, I know some people who've had, like, you know, their mom, their brother, themselves, like everyone, because they grew up there, generations of people have been displaced, which I think that's really, really hard. I feel really lucky that that is not the situation that we find ourselves in. But I do really think that mindset is super important.
Yeah.
It's like, and I'm very lucky that I believe that this is a real thing. I just don't personally suffer from it, but like, I am not anxious. Mm-hmm. And I think there are so many people who really are anxious and their minds sit in a place of worry around things that they can't control. And I think I'm grateful and lucky that I'm somehow able to separate those things into like what I can control and what I can't. And the only thing that really keeps me up at night is honestly anything emotional, like anything to do with like my relationships or like, did I say that thing? And I wish things I can control. Like I wish I would have showed up differently.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes so much sense. It feels like you have such a strong, like you said, mindset, but also just a solid foundation. And you've really laid the groundwork on top of that.
But it's like something that you have to practice. I mean, even to your point, maybe I don't have like a meditation practice, but like, I think I try to surround myself with people who share the same values I do. I try to read things and like listen to things that I think feed me and remind me how important it is to have gratitude. I started doing that like 5-minute journal thing. Like, I think all of those things, it's like church, right? Like, I'm not a religious person, but I think you have to keep reminding yourself why you're doing something.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've talked a little bit about the identity shift that is work and motherhood and your founder life. At the end of the day, with so much on your plate, what are the things that bring you back to you, that bring you back to your core, and not necessarily your pre-kid life, but just what are the things that make you feel like you?
I mean, I think, again, it's just people. I think it's like people who know you and love you independent of your achievement and your success or failure, right? I was at this conference recently, and at the end of it, the guy was like, I'm going to give you homework. Everybody, I want you to do something you love with someone you love. And it just happened to be that I had a girls' trip planned with three of my friends from college, and we went to Ojai. And honestly, it was like, you have to do those types of things. You have to take the time to just fill your cup and remind, like, be surrounded by people who like know you and love you and like see you for all of your, and listen, like not all of it is super flattering, right? Like, actually I was on a podcast. I think you mentioned Maggie Sellers. She had asked me a question at the beginning of the podcast about like, oh, what would your childhood friend say about you? And at the time I had said like all these really flattering things about myself. Honestly, I was like, oh, I think, you know, my friends would say I'm like curious and ambitious and outgoing. And then I called my friend afterwards and I said, hey, out of curiosity, I just got asked this question and I was thinking of you because I had just seen her and we've been friends since I was like in sixth grade. And she was like, oh my God. She's like, oh yeah, you're just the same. You're absent-minded. You're forgetful. Like, she said all of these other things that were like not what I had said. And she was like, oh, and like, she's like, I always think, you know, if Amy can do it, gosh, anyone can do it. She's like, you're such an inspiration. And I was like, that's really not the answer I gave, but thank you.
She really brought it home though. Hey, like, she really rounded out the answer in the end.
Yeah. But I guess I just mean like, it's also so important to surround yourself with people who just, I mean, she said it in the most loving way, right? Like, but it's also true. I am absent-minded. I do probably have ADD. You know what I mean?
I love it. As a last question, what is it that lights a fire in you? What is it that keeps you moving every day?
I mean, for sure, it's my purpose. And I think my purpose is, I will be honest with you, when I started Tower 28, I wrote down like what I wanted. And I used to even tell the team, I was like, my purpose is to be able to pay for college for my kids. That was like, and I was like, if I can pay for college for my three kids, because even if my husband made good money, I was like, I want to be able to contribute to it. Like, I didn't even have the fantasy of doing it 100% by myself because college is so expensive. I just wanted to be part of it. And then it was like, okay, college and maybe like, could I pay for a vacation a year? You know, like those were kind of the increments. And then the goalpost keeps moving. And for me, the goalpost honestly is not so financially driven anymore. Mm-hmm. It really is now that we've built this incredible brand and I have this team that I feel so lucky to work with. The thing that really gets me excited is, and I try to make sure I go out into the world and actually talk to the customer, but like when people say things to me, like, I've never been able to wear makeup until now, or like you changed my skin, mm-hmm. or I got like a letter the other day from like a 10-year-old with like pictures of, she just drew a bunch of the pictures and was like, this is my favorite brand. Thank you. Like, those are the things that actually, like, to put something into the world that means something to somebody else, you know, like that they receive it the way that you intend it to be. And that was really my goal always, was I wanted people to feel better in their own skin. I wanted them to walk through the world different. People who coun't use products or didn't feel safe using them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that is the thing for me.
On that note, when it comes to Tower 28, is there anything coming up for the brand? Anything that you want to shout out? What's next?
I mean, we're like in full holiday right now and pretty excited about we have a Poppy collab that just hit shelves recently. Another female founder, Allison Ellsworth, and I are pretty good friends. I don't know if people know this about her, but she also has eczema. And so it was one of those things where she really wanted to do something with us. I really wanted to do something with her. We kind of made it happen. And I think that is an amazing collab that we did. It's just so cute.
Amazing. We can't wait to see it. The brand's incredible. I have sensitive skin and the SOS rescue spray has been like everything. It's like day and night, middle of like any time of day, really.
Our number one selling product. It is perfect for every skin type, but especially anyone who's sensitive, whether it's post-workout or if it's in the airplanes, but also just to like keep your skin clean.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you're incredible. Thank you so much for joining us today. Where can everybody follow you and keep up with you?
Oh, I'm a kind of a never poster, but I am Amy Liu, AmyLiu _T28 on Instagram. And then of course, Tower 28 Beauty and on Instagram and TikTok.
Amazing. Amy, thank you so much. This was an amazing conversation.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode. If there is someone you think this conversation would resonate with, please share it with a friend. Tag us on Instagram at The Big Move Podcast and at mroberts.m. Subscribe, follow, and leave a review and connect with us. We love to hear from you and we want to chat soon.